esteemed ladies and or gentlemen. This is the Epicast, the most dignified and intellectually invigorating film discussion podcast in the entire webverse.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Lawrence?
Hey, what happened?
You are talking about an unethical ravings of a lunatic mind.
I was blind, and now I can see!
Hoo-ah!
Brought to you by CamsPCEpisodes.com.
Welcome to the Epicast, episode 3.5. This one's truncated.
Truncated. Explain that for all the non-English majors out there.
It means short.
Short.
Shortened. You know, to fit, you know, a small amount of time. Because this one is recorded on the tail end of the one you heard last week on Gran Torino. We thought, because we had seen The Wrestler as well, it was worth exploring in a separate podcast as opposed to cramming into a, you know, 10 minutes on this, 10 minutes on Gran Torino.
To spare your ears.
Yeah. Poor bastards. Pitiful peons of the podcast paradise.
Why is P so easy to alliterate?
I don't know. It really is.
Anyways.
Yeah, so listen, all you miserable SLBs out there. This is the Epicast, the shortened episode for whatever the hell day it is. We'll be back with a regular length
Very
one.
Very accurate.
I know. We'll be back with a, you know, regular length episode with, I guess, Taken with Liam Neeson. But this one's informal. We're going to call this, what happens when we finish the other podcast. Where we let
after
our,
hours podcast.
Well, I don't want to say, after hours. Don't say after dark, because that's what Slash Film calls their after sort of hours one.
Really?
Yeah, we're the after hours.
When you're done, you know, you're finished partying, you got a little bit of a hangover.
Exactly. This one is goofy. This is going to be
around,
fun.
Shoot the shit.
This is just relax.
Because all of our other ones are very formal, very stiff, I found. We don't laugh.
This one's all about the tangents and stuff, I think. So, now that we've just basically scared away anyone that would listen to this, they'll all run back to the Slash Film Cast or whatever. Which, by the way, great podcast. Inspired this one heavily. So, yes. This is brought to you, of course, by Cam's PC Episodes, as always.
Mm-hmm.
And back episodes can be found at epicast.blogspot.com. So, Tom... As is basically become customary with any of these things.
Customs can be built in 2 short episodes.
It's true. We really set a tradition with episode 1. episode 1, we were like, you know what, forget it. The mold is here to stay. Let's not mess with it.
Why? Because we're too lazy to mess with it, even if it was.
Is it lazy or is it was because it was so successful?
Ooh, a little bit of each.
By the way, I've gotten feedback on our podcast.
Who the fuck feeds back?
Is that a term? Feeds back?
I don't know. I'm trying to get in touch with my non-literary roots.
Okay. First Fucking off, English I was majors. Told that that we are actually very good, but I was told that we should never eat on a podcast again.
We don't eat on the podcast.
We did. Episode 2, Valkyrie.
Oh, your mom's cookies. I love those.
Apparently, it was like disgusting to listen to. It was just like two gluttons, just like...
We're about like 280, 270 apiece here.
Exactly,
5
yeah.
5-0, and yeah, we like our food.
Yes. So, well, you know, with this cheap operation, you know, sometimes you gotta have some sort of fringe benefit to recording these things.
Short bread is fringe.
We're not getting financially aided with these things.
Restitution.
Yeah, that's the word. There you go. So anyways, we'll start this one off like we do everyone. Tom, talk about 2 things you've seen lately. And only 2. Any All more right. will be cut from this podcast. Edit it out.
So the one I watched yesterday or day ago, whatever the hell it was. Was American Pie 2.
Mm.
And I also had the opportunity to watch...
Well, hold on. No.
I'm like kind of just slide past.
You should know by now the way this format works.
Try every single time.
It's true. It's true. You tried with week 2 or whatever.
All right, start making fun. What do you got to say?
No, I like American Pie 2 a
really?
Lot.
Really? I thought it was utter shit.
Okay.
Just straight up utter shit.
First off, tell people why.
Why was it utter shit? I mean, why did I think
it was shit? Yeah, why do you think it was shit?
Right. Well, why I thought it was shit has nothing to do with why it is shit. Why I thought it was shit was the fact that the sheer amount of penis jokes sometimes makes me question the heterosexuality of the directors, the so-called proclaimed heterosexuality of the directors and cast of this film. Now, the reason why it was shit was because it was awkward, it was clunky, it didn't have a plot. The plot was basically a 1950s beach party. Yay!
It's like an Elvis Presley movie.
Exactly. It was an Elvis Presley
all beach party. All they needed was like Annette Funicello to show up or something, and like Frankie, the big bopper,
Hello? Hey, baby.
Have you ever seen Back to the Beach?
No.
Check it out, man. Right. It's like a 1980s like update of with Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello. It's great.
An update.
It is. And it has Pee Wee Herman singing the bird. Jesus. Or bird Christ. Is the word, or whatever the hell because it is.
Is that what it was?
Nah.
My buddy who started to sing that song.
It's a great
time.
Movie. It's a
Maybe
really
it was
fun
playing,
movie.
Like right before that or something.
No.
Like, he kept on singing bird, bird, bird.
Bird is the word. Yeah, it's great.
Anyways, long and short of it, American Pie, if you like a ridiculous amount of penis jokes, pretty much everybody knows the format of it. We're just thinking of things we've seen recently.
The thing is, like, I mean, sex comedies, they're all more or less the same, whether it's Road Trip, whatever, Euro Trip. Why do they have Trip in the title so often?
Because it's the classic Bildungsroman, the novel where it's the literary idea where the man or the character goes on a journey of discovery. It's the idea of journey, in the same way that Motorcycle Diaries was... in the same mold. I mean, don't get me wrong.
I don't
know. It's not the same movie.
But, okay.
The same idea they're working towards.
Have you ever seen... This is just sort of a tangent. Side... Not a tangent. Have you ever seen... E2 Mama Tambien?
Oh, yes, I did, actually.
That is like a sex comedy in a sense.
Yeah, a sex comedy, even a sex trip.
Done by Alfonso Cuarón, who did Children of Men.
But it wasn't nearly as awkward.
It was pretty awkward.
Yeah, but it wasn't nearly as awkward as
obviously
American
it's a it's
movie.
More dramatic, obviously, yeah, and a much better film.
Exactly, but think of it in the matter of that in the way in which they approach sexuality.
Mm.
It was much more of an idea that it's something they're not comfortable nor familiar with, but it's something that they're learning towards and they accept it. I mean, whereas in American Pie 2, you feel nothing but awkward the entire time. You just brings out the
not
very
true.
Worst.
Okay. That movie, I'm not a big fan of American Pie 1. I didn't really think it was very good at all. It felt really badly made and sort of cheap and just kind of amateurly acted because they were all unknown, basically no experience. I thought American Pie 2, though, the comedy I thought worked very well.
What comedy, man? All they do is talk about their dick jokes, or they make fun of retards. I mean,
yeah, but
that's what
Kevin Smith does too. It's in the writing.
And
I think.
Why do I hate Kevin Smith?
Do you?
I told you this, man. I hate Kevin Smith.
You hate
I can't
Kevin Smith?
Stand any of his movies.
Get out of this room, sir. I'll find someone else to podcast.
I did like Mallrats. I did like Mallrats. Mallrats was decent.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but other than that, they sucked.
Okay, well, I mean, okay. What about the Judd Apatow comedies? 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up, Superbad.
They're decent, but they're starting to get that familiar, overplayed trope going on. The same techniques don't work well if you're using them again and again and again.
Okay.
But I think American Pie really hits towards that.
American Pie 2 doesn't, break out of the sex comedy teen sex comedy genre.
Nobody's asking.
But I thought it did it well. Too. And I think it's worth recognizing the ones that, do that formula very well.
See,
and I'll tell you where the film won me over. Was with the romantic story between Jason Biggs and Allison Hannigan.
Oh, Flute Girl.
You know what?
Oh,
you can call me a sap, but that
are you
worked.
Serious?
I was like,
did it work to you when he gave up nailing that ridiculously gorgeous Eastern European lady,
Shannon Elizabeth?
Thank you. Who does a horrible accent, by the way?
Yeah, but that made it cuter, though.
Really? Yeah.
Nah, I think a little. You don't think so?
No, I. Go bigger, Go all the way or don't go at all.
She didn't get naked in that one, did she?
No, she didn't.
Yeah, that was disappointing.
It was disappointing. But anyways, the question remains, son. Do you think the movie... I think the movie jumped the shark entirely. Now, I was more than willing to put up with this whole, what we need to do, guys? We need to go to the beach house and have ourselves a beach party. Make it one to remember. I mean, that was stupid. I forgave that. But the point where I could not forgive the movie in its utter stupidity was the mere fact... This Jason Biggs nerd gave up boning Shannon Elizabeth Shannon Elizabeth in order to go have this flute girl. Now, don't get me wrong, she's cute and all that, and a couple of my buddies, we're definitely digging the flute girl too. But the fact remains, he could have still nailed her and gone to the flute girl afterwards. He could have had his cake and ate it too, and yet he didn't. Why? Because they wanted to appeal to stupid, sappy-ass bastards like you who like this kind of tripe.
It worked for me so much.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Like,
I don't understand.
Okay,
it's
funny because American Pie 1, like I said, not a big fan. American Pie 3 was not that good either. 2, for me, worked. It was like suddenly everything aligned and they hit one out of the park, and then they went back to mediocrity.
Now I understand why. Now I understand why you like Two and a Half Men.
It's
on the same.
Promised you wouldn't mention that on the podcast.
It's on the same level. It's on the exact same level.
Yeah. Okay.
See through.
Big recommend for me.
A crashing bullshit of a don't go.
Whatever. If you like that type of movie, it's a very good one.
Plague. Uh-huh. Nah, fuck it.
It's okay, what else did you see before we come to blows here?
I also saw
Defending the Honor of American Pie 2. I can't believe I've taken that role.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But yes, go on.
I mentioned this in passing, and Cam wouldn't let it go.
No.
No, I watched this movie with my cousins. Mm. It's Golden Compass.
Now, Tom, what did you think of the Golden Compass?
I was touched. It was a really beautiful piece that I think brought together a lot of disparate elements into one magical fantasy story that just brought us all...
Okay, really.
It sucked balls, but it was awful. It was stupid. It was Chronicles of Narnia with half the budget and half the talent.
Half the running time.
Half the running time.
It was like all this shit was just getting thrown into a pot. They're like...
all right, we got some demons. I don't know what they are. We got some animals. Okay,
Sam Elliott?
Animal. Exactly.
Sam Elliott, the airboat captain or whatever?
He gets a rabbit, you get this, you know, you get a rat, you get this, you get a dog, you get a mouse, you get this, and all this shit. Okay, now we got dust, see? All right, dust is great, see? And I link this all together, right? It's just asinine.
Did you understand what the movie was about? Because I sure didn't. They're talking about dust, and I understand what the demons were, but I didn't really understand them that well. But I didn't understand the dust at all. What's the dust?
Demons are supposed to be your soul. Dust is the shit that links us all together.
Whatever. You know what links us all together? Our hatred of the Golden Compass.
Golden Compass.
Like, that movie was, it was a mess.
You know, the only part that really, that I enjoyed watching the movies with, and the part where the young cousins screamed in terror, see if you can guess.
When they, was it the part where the polar bear smoked the other polar bear's jaw?
Fucking precisely. And that was it entirely.
I couldn't believe watching that. When that jawbone flew at the screen,
yes,
it was like, holy Christ!
I did the same thing I did. I choked on my popcorn when I was chewing it. And I spat all out, and the exact same reaction I had in Meet Joe Black. You know where Brad Pitt gets smoked three times by the car? And one left, right, left, right.
Yes.
Exact same reaction. I wound it and made them watch it again. It was awesome.
It's too bad. I mean, the movie had a lot of good actors in it. You know, it had Sam Elliott. He's always awesome.
Yep.
Eva Green. Come on. You can't go wrong with Eva Green. Come on. Fine. You know what?
I think she did a shit poor job in that
Casino Royale. Yeah. You're wrong. You're wrong on every level.
No, but you're right though.
Embarrassment.
It had all the elements and it didn't do anything with them.
Did you like the ending? That was like a cliffhanger. Like a cliffhanger. Let's go get dad credits.
It seemed like exactly like that Lord of the Rings movies. You know, when they it's the film movie, that's the only reason.
And what's funny is like the movie bombed, so there's not even gonna be a sequel. That movie has no reason to exist.
It's dumb.
It should just like go into through some portal black hole. It doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't matter.
If you say ignoring it from the fact of legitimate cinema, and if you're looking at it from the fact of a purely like a kid's movie, right?
Mm.
Something you want to take the little
crap.
Shitheads that watch to see. Well, if you usually when you'd see like a Disney movie like, you know, Cinderella or what have you, there is some elements that you can see was built towards a kid's movie. When I'm watching this movie, I'm thinking the entire time this kid has been doing the lead character. The little girl has been doing nothing but being harassed by everybody. I mean, she's been, like, beaten, slapped around, kidnapped, you know, absconded with. And she goes on these crazy-ass adventures. She almost gets ripped in half. Literally, her soul and her body gets almost literally separated from her.
I don't even remember that.
How can you take a kid to watch? I was feeling kind of bad for putting this in. You're making, you know, agreeing to see this shit with them.
It was just a mess. It was forgettable.
All right, so, Golden Compass.
Golden Compass. Three letters in that title really spell it out.
Golden.
Come on, Tom.
All right. What were the two movies you saw?
Did you figure it out?
It's ass.
Ass. Yeah, that's right.
Ass.
The movie's
that's
pure ass.
That's
thank
clever.
You.
I didn't want to,
thank
give
you.
It
thank
all
you.
Away to you.
And Nicole Kidman was facially frozen in that movie.
She's like a Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton.
Tilda
yeah.
Swinton rabbit.
But yes. So what did I see? I saw The Unborn.
The Unborn, what was that about? I've only seen the previous one.
The Unborn is produced by Michael Bay through his Platinum Dunes label.
How many explosions?
None, I don't think.
So then why is it a Michael Bay movie?
Because he makes shitty horror movies, right. Produces them. He did the Texas Chainsaw remake, he's doing the Friday the 13th remake. And he made The Unborn, which is written and directed by David Goyer, who wrote and directed, wrote the three Blade films, directed the last one.
How do you have this shit on the top of your head?
I don't know.
All right.
And he also had, at this point, a very dubious amount of input on the Batman Begins and Dark Knight. He's listed as story by. My guess is he's just a friend of theirs who was like in the back. He's like, yeah, he was in the back room and like they were like, Chris Nolan's there with his brother, Jonathan, going, you know what? What if the Joker is like an agent of chaos? And David Goyer's in the background going, yeah, that's a good idea. Like, we'll give you a credit. Thanks, David. Thanks for coming out. Go make your shitty horror film that no one wants to see.
All right, what was the brief synopsis? Where did it succeed? Where did it fail?
Okay, it's about... If it did succeed. Well, brief synopsis, it's about a young girl who looks exactly like Megan Fox.
Right.
Produced by Michael Bay. It's like he's trying to find the next... you know, Megan Fox, another vacant-eyed, vapid, you know, wannabe porn star.
She liked her in Transformers.
I did like her very much, actually. She was the highlight of the film. Isn't that sad? She was the highlight
of Transformers. She was the highlight of the film.
But let's be honest. She's as talented as a dish rag. And as smart as a dish rag.
You can say washcloth, but dish rag.
Yeah, dish rag. Whatever. She's an idiot.
She's an idiot.
And has no talent, really.
A little bit of spud.
A spud, yeah.
As intelligent as a rutabaga.
But anyhow, the girl in this one has about as much talent. She's like cardboard.
Nice.
And her name is Odette Yustman, I think.
Okay.
And she just plays a young girl who is basically haunted by a demonic child. Have you ever seen a film where people are being chased by spooky children? Because I never have.
Shining.
The Come Ring. On,
play.
The Ring.
The Ring. All right.
The Grudge.
The Grudge.
The Others. The could Cabin. We go on? We could, but we won't. Because this movie is shit, and it's basically, she finds out that she is being inhabited by being terrorized by a Dybbuk.
A who?
A Dybbuk.
What the fuck's a Dybbuk?
Well, Tom, a Dybbuk is a creature, up? No, I didn't. All it's right. A creature of Jewish folklore.
Oh.
This girl finds out she's Jewish.
Uh-huh.
And related to concentration camp survivors.
Fuck's sakes. Because that's appropriate.
Yeah. And her grandma was involved in, Nazi experiments on twins.
Oh, right, the Angel of Death, what's his name?
Yeah, I don't remember his name. But whatever the case, she had a twin brother in the womb who she strangled, I guess, with her umbilical cord. It wasn't her fault, obviously. But the movie, she's like crying. She's like, my brother, it's all my fault.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, like, well, whatever the case. Basically, she's haunted by the Dybbuk that wants to be reborn through her.
Okay.
And somehow there's twins tied into it. I don't know how Gary Oldman ended up in this movie. I guess a bet. Do you think it was charity? Do you think like they were like, ooh, okay, Gary, you're done? I think he might have filmed it on like his lunch breaks from The Dark Knight. He like took off the glasses and fake mustache and just like, yeah, sure, David, here's some lines, you know. I proclaim the evil, you know. Great, thanks, I got work to do. David's like, I'm David Goyer's like, I'm making a movie.
It's like the Mickey Mouse Club of shit.
Yeah, it's like, I'm talented, guys! Basically, The Unborn should be aborted.
Aborted. Aborted. That's awesome.
Isn't
I see
it?
You've also said some other very interesting things.
Oh, here. Yeah, in a review I wrote.
Ooh, a messy afterbirth. I like that.
Thank you.
That's very descriptive.
I said it gives you that kind of poorly delivered.
Poorly delivered. Laboriously delivered.
Laboriously delivered.
Poorly conceived.
Poorly conceived. And I also called it stillborn upon arrival.
There you go. Any other pregnancy/...
This movie isn't deserving of hate. It's too boring and stupid. Anyone who does, who like goes to see it like me is deserving of the stupidity.
So you got what you paid for.
I did. It's like being hit in the face with a baseball bat for like 90 minutes.
And then shelling out $10.50 to the guy.
It's like asking someone to like... It's like going to prison and then like paying someone else to turn you into like...
Someone else's bitch.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's like trading yourself for cigarettes.
Except you don't use bag of popcorn.
It's like being cigarettes. Paying to be violated.
Any other analogies?
Anally.
All right, yes. So the last three movies, American Pie 2, Golden Compass, and The Unborn, we've all concisely and...
No, American Pie 2 is worth seeing.
Oh, right, no, yeah, you're the idiot.
Yeah, it's just, it's worth seeing. But, Unborn is horrible.
Oh, okay.
Just embarrassing. And I hope Odette Yustman gets as much respect as Megan Fox does.
Which is none.
All right, on the front of a car.
Front of a car? Bento.
From by Michael Bay. Do you think Michael Bay does have a thing going with these people?
I think it's casting couch.
Yeah, casting couch.
Has to be a perk. Jesus. I mean, if his signature move is explosions.
Do you think her last name is really Fox? I don't think so.
No, it's probably like Odette.
Yustman? That's her name, but I don't know.
Anyways.
Probably Gardner Spicht or something.
I wasn't going to guess.
Anyways, the other one I watched was Downfall, a movie we discussed a couple times on the podcast.
What's the German name for that one again?
I don't know. Ein Dunfall. The story of Hitler's last days in the bunker.
Right, and it was narrated by Hitler's personal secretary, Trottel Jung.
There you go, yes.
Good luck spelling that.
And it basically is with him and his cabinet. Are they called a cabinet?
Sure.
Sure, yeah. Higher-ranking SS people.
His buddies.
His buddies. His good-time buddies.
His Nazi buddies.
Slappy-time pals.
Watch a couple movies, you know, chill out.
I like Slappy-time pals. That's
slappy
better.
Slappy-time pals.
So anyways, but it's a fairly epic film. It's about 2.5 hours. German-made film,
mm-hmm.
Subtitled.
Yes.
Yes, in German.
In German is a subtitle, German. Then. Well,
that's nine!
Entirely useless.
Yes.
All right.
So, what did you saw it before I did.
I did.
What was your impression?
A long time ago. I thought Bruno Ganz, the director, the actor that played Hitler, made a surprising amount of effort into portraying a character who's not necessarily a monster, although a lot of people would obviously disagree with that. It's not the character that I saw wasn't necessarily that of a monster, but of a real, really horrible, disturbed, awful human being.
Well, yeah, he was like a mental patient that had been put in charge.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
It's like, why is this guy in charge in the first place?
Yeah, it's you think the reason why I like this movie is that they could have taken the easy their director,
Oliver Hirschbiegel.
There you go. All right.
He followed this up with The Invasion with Nicole Kidman.
Oh, good choice.
Yes, I know.
He could have taken an easy road out and made
a real exploitative.
Just, yeah, exactly.
You know, Hitler's
just
evil,
running around, being a crazy dictator. But
yeah.
in reality, to me, what I liked about it was the fact that Hitler came across as a human. I think it's too easy to.
Yeah.
Write him off as
a monster. There's a couple scenes here that are so great where he's you know, loony is, you know.
Yeah, perhaps suffering from the Parkinson's that I think he was.
But he's in his office with the maps, like commanding imaginary armies.
Yeah. Commanding the imaginary armies.
Yeah.
That just
and then having his men shot if the imaginary armies don't do what he wants.
And they're just not there. I mean, he's
no.
literally.
And people are still listening
to
him. People are still just like, you know what? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there wasn't much option left. Don't forget,
no.
This is Downfall is filmed in the last couple of days, couple of weeks rather of his
reign.
So this is kind of takes place chronologically after Valkyrie dies.
Yes.
So I mean, he has the rampant paranoia. I think he survived at least a score of assassination attempts on him
mm-hmm.
the entire time. So I mean, he has the paranoia going on. He's suffering from the mental imbalance, perhaps from Parkinson's as well. You're seeing a character that has no grip on reality whatsoever. And it's interesting to see how the other characters, whether it's Magda and Joseph Goebbels, Eva Braun, his
wife. There's an interesting thing with him and Eva Braun in
it's
the movie.
It's almost an abusive relationship.
Well, not even abusive. It's like they're like brother and sister almost.
More fraternal. It's not exactly
do you
it's
think
not the same aspect to it.
It's from the way the movie portrays it. Do you think Alfred Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
Although he also had women issues. But do you think Adolf Hitler was putting from the rough?
Oh, there is that really interesting.
I know that's a theory that's kicked
one,
around.
Yeah, and it's based on they actually bring it up. They do a live recreation of that photo in which he's bestowing an honor on the Hitler Youth for defending Berlin.
Yeah,
and he really affectionately pats that kid's head. I mean,
yeah.
They're definitely perhaps maybe there is a basis for it, but I don't really think.
I don't. I mean,
I don't
know.
Think it affected them
yeah,
really so much.
I mean. Either way,
but
it's a good performance.
It is
and
a good performance.
There was another performance I really liked by Karina Harfouk. Whatever. it starts with an H. Playing Magda Goebbels. Now, Joseph Goebbels was one of the highest ranking SS.
Information propaganda.
Yeah, there you go. And there's a scene in this film where it's basically the end of the Reich. It's over. You know, it's the downfall. Yeah, that's right. And she goes around and poisons her children in a really powerful scene.
Yeah.
She first puts them out with a like tranquilizers, and all the kids take the tranquilizer, except for the oldest daughter, who knows something's up. And it's like her forcing it down. And then she goes, and it shows, it follows her from step by step, putting the poison capsules in each child's mouth. That scene, like, I will not forget that scene.
It was very evocative, definitely.
It was powerful.
Yeah. Well, there's not much more to be said about that.
It's a great film. And I would, you don't want to talk more about child murder?
Well, I was going to say.
What's the technical term for child murder?
Infanticide.
Is it infanticide? Or is that just infants?
No, it's infanticide.
Is that all children?
Yeah, child murder, man.
So infanticide. If I go and kill a 14-year-old.
Patricide.
What if I kill a 14-year-old? Or is that just murder?
It's murder, dude.
Homicide?
Homicide, I guess.
What about an 8-year-old?
I don't know. I'm sure the law has like a limit on it. Or in the books, there's like some great English dictionary in the sky saying you cannot call it infanticide.
At what time does it... This isn't on CSI. I need this to be on CSI or something.
No, you don't. CSI is another shit show I can't believe you
Everything
watch.
Like I learn from movies.
Oh.
So, yeah. I haven't seen that yet.
All right. Before we go, I was going to say, we'll continue on rather. The other characters, I like to see in the bunker how they're all kind of living completely... almost like a bacchanal, crazy, happy, good times.
Yeah, they're like all drunk and just like...
swearing and having the best time of their lives. Yes. And they know that it's ending. I thought it was a really interesting way.
And I liked how Eva Braun is sort of like the party organizer.
Yeah.
She's just like organizing all these parties in there, you know, get out the silverware, you know.
It's just such a denial of reality. And maybe that's one of those... I think that was another powerful image to me, rather, was seeing that it's just the complete denial of what they've done and what they've wrought.
Yeah. Great movie, I thought.
Yeah,
well worth seeing.
Definitely worth seeing. Not because it's like that typical white man's, what do you call it? Not ability.
Burden?
No, not burden, but it seems like all the Holocaust movies, all your friends have to see it. You know, just because you have to know what it is about and you have to fligate yourself with it. I mean.
Yeah, I agree.
You have to watch this because it's a part of your heritage.
Well, I've been on a real Nazi kick lately.
Well, who hasn't?
I mean, I've seen all the World War II movies, you know, the American World War II movies. Which ones?
Which ones are you talking about?
Battle of the Bulge, Great Escape,
right?
Saving Private Ryan, you know, all the classics. Oh, come on.
Nah, I'm kidding.
You know, all the greats, but...
Saving Private Ryan?
No, I didn't.
It was pretty funny, actually. Yeah, they had Ronald McDonald, like, looking for his arm and trying to pick it up with his other arm, you know? The soldier at the very beginning of the beach scene?
What was the Grimace?
The Grimace? The Grimace was the guy that stole the hamburgers.
No, I mean, no, Grimace was purple.
Oh, he was the hemorrhoid.
Was he a hemorrhoid?
Man. He was the hemorrhoid.
That's what happens when you eat McDonald's.
Exactly. Grimace is the after effect. It's what you shit out. If you flush the toilet too quickly, that is what Grimace is after McDonald's meal.
Grimace was always my favorite as a kid. Does that say something about me?
I don't know. I always liked the Hamburglar, which is kind of...
Hamburglar was a rogue. He was a rogue, man. You know, him and Birdie were hooking up. You know it.
Who the fuck's Birdie?
The bird woman.
I didn't know there was a bird woman in McDonald's pantheon.
She was sassy.
Was she?
No. But do you remember Mac Tonight?
Who?
Mac Tonight.
No, I've never.
He only came around on promotions. He had a moon for a half moon for a head and sunglasses, and he played a piano, and he was like Ray Charles.
Oh, fuck. Oh,
well, I mean, he was. I mean, he had...
No, I know, but I know the reference you're going
for. And he would sing like this, like hardcore, like soul music. And Mac Tonight was sweet. Because
that's what soul's really about. Shelling out to the man.
It wasn't Ray Charles doing the voice.
No,
it just,
I know, but
it
that's
just
exactly
looked like
what
him.
Soul music and R&B. And...
It was, like, Mac Tonight was hardcore pimp.
Shilling out hamburgers.
Him and Grimace.
Him and Grimace?
Do you think
was
it's,
a pimp.
Do you think it's unfortunate?
I think Grimace was, like, the same way that one of those, that big purple Teletubby is.
Tinky Winky?
Yeah, that's it. How do you know that, dude?
I just do. Yeah, I think it's kind of sad you don't see those characters on McDonald's commercials anymore.
Why? We have that.
I miss them.
Fantastic. Now all we have on McDonald's cups is like.
I'm loving it.
No, Olympics.
That,
it's all
Justin
Olympics now.
Justin Timberlake, that fairy.
What, Justin Timberlake's not on any McDonald's commercials?
He used to be. Well, he wasn't on it. He did the song.
Oh, right.
But, Olympics.
You know what? Just put a picture of a damn Big Mac in front of me.
Have you seen the Japanese ads for McDonald's?
They are very confusing.
With the female Ronald McDonald?
Yeah, they are very confusing.
That's bizarre.
It's odd. It's like
that's
this
bizarre.
Avant-garde 1970s art piece.
Do you think they're sexually attracted to that McDonald's woman?
I was sexually attracted to the McDonald's woman. Really? She was pretty cute. She was pretty...
It was bizarre. I saw that.
Leash.
Yeah, nice. I mean, I never felt that way towards the Grimace.
I gotta say, made me regard Ronald McDonald in a whole new light. I'm going to sit on his lap and take a few pictures.
How did we go from downfall to McDonald's commercials?
I don't know. This is what we do.
I know it is. This is why it's 3.5. So, anyways, let's get to our main review and the real reason we're here.
Dun 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 dun.
The Wrestler. Dump. Give a synopsis. Synopsize this bitch.
Now I'm gonna synopsize the shit out of this thing. The Wrestler.
Take it out back and you synopsize the shit out of this thing.
It was a very interesting piece, a character piece about a wrestler out of touch with time and place. He recognizes that he's a failure. He's struggling to succeed in a market that doesn't want him nor needs him anymore. In short, he's an out of touch man in an out of touch kind of place.
This is the most vague synopsis. But keep going.
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly what I just said.
It is.
What the fuck else do you have to say about it?
Well, it's about Mickey Rourke.
Right.
As a, basically, a washed up...
Randy LaRan Robinson.
Was he... I didn't catch it. Was he WWF, or was it just supposed to be sort of WWF-like?
I don't... Yeah.
Okay. He's basically a former wrestler in the WWF mold from the 80s, who is now washed up into modern times, 40-something years old, early 50s, yeah, somewhere in there.
Hearing problem there.
Hearing problem, bad knees.
Bad heart.
Addicted to medication.
Addicted to steroids.
Was it steroids?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right. It was steroids.
Shit like it was
That's right. And it's just, this is a film that doesn't really have a plot. It's about his life. And we sort of witness him going to beat up rec centers and community centers to engage in, you know, wrestling matches, low-paying wrestling matches for, like, audiences of, you know, 15 people, hurting himself, you know, over and over, sort of with the, holding out the dream of, you know, I think, regaining the glory he once had.
Getting that shot that he's looking for again. I mean, I think that's what he's building towards the entire time, is building himself up to that shot. I mean, you could see the, how quickly he accepted that chance. They showed in the previous how quickly he accepted that chance to get
the glory,
big time
go game. To have a rematch of his great match from 20 years earlier. But it also follows his relationships with two women, a stripper named Cassidy. Was her real name Pam?
I don't know.
I think it was Pam. Sure.
I think it was Pam, played by Marissa Tomei.
Excellent performance by
Excellent performance.
I don't ever think I've seen her fuck up in a single role before.
Oscar with Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, I didn't see that. It was from 1980. What?
1990, I think.
Really?
Yeah, maybe 91. But his relationship with her, and then also with his estranged daughter, played by Evan Rachel Wood. So, Tom, this movie is coming in on a tidal wave of hype.
Tidal wave.
A typhoon.
Incredible tsunami, if
this
you will.
This is the Katrina typhoon of movies right now.
Hype.
Or maybe that means it's bad. Because, that's probably bad. Maybe The Unborn is that one. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was that.
It's a tidal wave of messy afterbirth.
There you go. But, Tom, the Wrestler, coming in, high expectations. Mickey Rourke's, at this point, expected to quite... probably win the Oscar for Best Actor. What did you think of it?
I thought it was good.
No, I think I think it did everything that we're hoping it to do. I think that Mickey Rourke really came through. He did a fantastic character piece, one of which I haven't seen him do in ages, man.
He hasn't done anything lately. Double Team.
Yeah.
With Van Damme.
I think this is definitely his ticket. I think. In as much as that, The Wrestler was a story about trying to make it back to the big time. I think this is a perfect vehicle for Mickey Rourke to make it back to the big time, to make it back to where he was in the 80s and the 90s, doing the kind of blockbuster marquee.
The 90s? Was the 90s a good...
I
think he was kind of... He was already kind of tapping out by midnight. Tapping. There we go. Wrestling metaphor!
Jesus Christ, we're on topic today, folks.
We just got to throw in an Are You Ready to Rumble reference.
He was going to tap out, but he didn't.
Yeah, that's right.
He was down for the count. Kicked out of the two.
Delivered a suplex to his career.
Standing on the edges of destiny.
Pile driver.
Pile driver into his future. No, really quickly, he just followed it through. I think this is exactly what he needs, and it's more of a meaningful piece. And that you can see the obvious relationship between the actor and the character.
I think this one, the actor is the character to a certain degree. I mean, there's a lot of similarities.
How much acting did he need to do, and how much was it?
I would argue he had to do a lot. They say the hardest thing to do, actually, is to play yourself. But I don't think he's playing himself to a degree with, I think, the regret of the, you know, the broken career. And also, Mickey Rourke has a very, very turbulent
love life.
And well, he doesn't really have... I don't know if he has any family, does he?
I don't know.
He has an ex-wife, I know, that he went through hell and back with. But, I mean, there's definitely a lot of similarities between Mickey Rourke's life and Randy the Ram.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you can see that... I think the few times that... what do you call it? The Ram. The parts that I liked it was the Ram trying to connect with... the characters in his life, rather the women in his life that maybe he let down, or rather he didn't fulfill.
Right.
Made him more of a human piece.
Well, like, and also,
big lug.
I liked the fact that the film, which, by the way, is directed by Darren Aronofsky.
Darren who?
Darren Aronofsky, who did Requiem for a Dream, Pi, and the one I haven't seen, which I'm blanking on. It had The Fountain.
Oh, kicked ass!
Well, did it? Was it good?
I loved it.
Okay, I'll watch it. But yeah, I mean, he's really unobtrusive with this film. Those other films have been very heavy on style.
Yeah, heavy on style.
This one is very hang back and just observe.
But it has the same kind of, if you look at the cinematography, I guess, looking at the palette that they chose, it has the same kind of depressed.
It does.
Gray, not to say that his other movies have the same palette choices.
Requiem might.
Requiem kind of did, but it. And when you look at the different characters that are doing it, they changed from each one.
Right.
I mean, it definitely had a really big impact on.
Right.
Big impact on the movie itself. Did you watch Pi, by the way?
I didn't like it.
I think it made me sick.
I thought it was shit. Why?
That was just so.
Disconcerting to me, it felt like a very ambitious art school mind fuck. Yeah. It was just like, you know, let's just torment the audience for 80 minutes
even the way they set their, did their shots sick to me.
I really didn't like it.
It's a real shit show.
It's a film I have a feeling most people say they like because they are intimidated by it.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone, I mean, maybe.
Now my question is, when I went to see this one, of course I watched, you know, like I said, I watched The Fountain, I watched Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah.
So obviously the one thing I was looking forward to out of anything else in this entire movie was the score.
Really?
Oh, I was looking forward to it with a fucking heart on, man. I love that.
Just seriously?
Clint Mansell did both Requiem for a Dream and The Fountain.
Yes.
And I love his shit. It is intense. It's awesome. He scores the most amazing stuff towards it. I mean, he made the Requiem for... His main piece from Requiem for a Dream was so popular that they used it as a part of Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers.
Yeah. Like in the trailer?
Yeah, exactly, in the trailer.
Okay.
They had that piece on there. Anyways, I was looking forward to his score the entire time, and I was kind of a little bit disturbed, if not slightly pissed off, when they didn't have that sweeping theatrical instrumentals that they had in the...
In The Wrestler?
In The Wrestler, yeah.
Do you think it would have been a good idea to put a score in that movie?
Could have been.
I think because it's such a grubby sort of... personal film, I think...
Yeah, but look at Requiem for a Dream. That was an intensely personal film,
but it was also highly cinematic.
Okay.
You look at those sequences with Ellen Burstyn with, you know, the crazy stuff in her apartment when she's all high on whatever the hell it was on.
Yeah.
Was she on...
She's speed.
Diet pills and stuff.
Yeah, speed. Right?
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's... The Wrestler is definitely a more small, intimate, emotional movie than that.
Fair enough. And there was a couple of bits where you did get a chance to hear Clint Mansell, but mostly it was...
Yeah, mostly it was actual 80s rock, hair metal mostly, which I thought worked really well.
Yeah, it did work well.
One of the things I thought worked... There was a lot of things about this movie that I love. This is a movie that, when I walked out of it, I was over the moon.
Yeah.
But in the days since, I've just been thinking about it more and more, and I wrote up my... my full review, which can be read at camspcepisodes.com.
Go figure.
I just kept thinking about that movie more and more and more. It's like when I saw Mulholland Drive or Dark Knight or, you know, even Slumdog. It's like I can't get it out of my head and I just keep analyzing it. And I really think this is one of the best movies I've seen in a long time.
Really?
I do.
Well, what was the, if you could...
What was the one part that really just did it for you?
Because we always
What Mickey Rourke's performance for me, I mean, basically the movie is Mickey Rourke's performance, right? But we see movies all the time where we watch characters emote.
Yep.
This movie, there's like this transference that goes on where, like, I felt what Mickey Rourke felt. Like, he communicated his emotions so well in this movie that I was sucked right in. All
right.
And, like, there's a scene in here in the film where he goes on an awkward walk with his daughter.
Yeah, that's true.
Which...
At the...
There's a part where
the park or something like that.
Yeah, at a beachside sort of park, right? And there's a part where he's sitting down and talking to her about, you know,
right.
Where he basically says, you know, I'm a beaten up or I'm a broken down piece of meat.
Yeah,
and you know, you have a right not to love me.
I'm don't hate me kind of thing.
Yeah, or you know, I understand you don't love me and I deserve to be alone.
Yeah.
And like that is one of the most heartbreaking moments in movies in a long time because it's so honest.
You know, maybe it was the fact that it was so honest that I couldn't forgive him. You know, at the end of it, I found myself saying, I couldn't forgive him. I couldn't. You know, you make your mistakes, you do what you do, and granted, he did try to redeem himself, but at the end of it, he just.
But I think do it, you think
it lost it where when he made the final decision to throw it away?
Well, the thing is, I mean, he goes and gets a job at a deli. Basically, he's always struggling for money, and he gets a job in a deli. Right. Do you think he was happy at that job? Because it seemed to me he was.
No, I think if you take a look at it again, he was happy when the rest of his life was going well. At that job, he was happy.
I think he was happy when people didn't associate him with the title because he doesn't, you know, start to blow up or what have you, or start to screw up his life until someone recognizes him at that job as, you know, the Ram.
The Ram, Ramberson, yeah.
That is what, you know, does it. And, you know, starts the downward spiral of the character. And I hope that's not a spoiler for anyone who's going to go see it. I mean, I think they could tell it's probably not a happy film.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a movie that lifts you up.
And we're not going to give away the ending because we can't. It's very ambiguous. Still. Well, fairly ambiguous.
Yeah, no, you're right, definitely, but it is fairly ambiguous. But I think that combined with Marissa Tomei, Evan Rachel Wood, who plays his little daughter there.
Evan Rachel Wood, I think, like, she's an actress, you don't hear her name much.
And we
she
got,
is a talent you are going to hear about in the many years to come, I think.
And I think rightly so. I think all these characters did an excellent job of bringing it together to make one consistently, not only accurate, but like you're saying, emotive character piece that was able to speak to the audience.
And the funny thing is, like, Mickey Rourke's the one getting all the, you know, the attention right now. All right. But Marissa Tomei is also very important to the film because her story is basically a mirror image of his.
Exactly, the female side of it.
They're both in careers that thrive on youth.
Yeah.
They're both at the point where they are over the hill. Whereas one of them is willing to let go and move on, the other won't.
Maybe that speaks to the amount of adulation and the need for adulation that the characters exhibit. I mean, you see Mickey Rourke's character definitely...
He lives for it, right.
Yeah, there's this one, for me, it was a rather poignant scene where you saw him in, I think it was like a community hall or some such thing, where he was taking pictures and autographs, you know, pressing the flesh, what have you.
Yeah.
And there was all of maybe half a dozen people that had come to see him the entire time.
Yeah.
But he lived for those moments, you know, when he got that...
And it's like, we feel uncomfortable for him because there's no one there.
Right.
But he seems happy.
He seems happy. And I think that's contrasted with Marissa Tomei's character, the stripper, wherein she's all right to accept the fact that people may not like her anymore, may not see her as that youthful thing, and they don't necessarily want lap dances. She's not.
Not that only that, like, she does her job,
yeah.
But like Mickey Rourke's character obviously is coming on to her. She is not content to take her job into, like, to live for her job.
Right.
And that's to her, it's money. To him, it's a life.
That's definitely a thing where it breaks off too. Is that you see it. You see the contrast that they have and the way in which they live their life and they deal with lives. And it's interesting. Perhaps, or the comment, saying which one is more successful. We find out at the end of it, of course, we're not going to tell you what happens, but you find out which character is more successful and which one ends up not necessarily happy, but content.
Or do you think that they, I'm not going to say who, kind of goes out or whatever, ends the way they would want to end?
Yeah, well, that's definitely legitimate criticism. But
because, for any person in an entertainment field... There's no better way to go out than at the height of your, or like to, with the ultimate of glory.
Yeah, that's,
you know, of adulate, you know, audience adoration.
Maybe that's what this Mickey Rourke's character lived for the entire time, was that adulation. As just the ultimate expression of adulation was to be there at the end of it.
Mm-hmm. I just thought, first off, Mickey Rourke, who looks like hell. He looks like enough. The Thing.
That plastic surgery will not help you.
No, but he was so emotive and passionate in this film.
Yeah, he's like a big green lump of clay.
There's like a list of characters in my head of the last, you know, sort of few years that I look at as being the best merging of, you know, an actor into a character.
Right.
You know, Billy Bob Thornton in Sling Blade in A Simple Plan.
Fair enough.
I think of him. I think of Cate Blanchett in Benjamin Button.
Oh, God.
And not a great movie, but she's great. And I just... And Anne Hathaway, actually, in Rachel Getting Married is another great one. Where they just disappear into the character. And this, his is one of the best examples. And it's a simple movie. Very, very well directed. And I think it's... I mean, I give it a 5 out of 5.
Definitely. Well, I don't I'd go that far with it. Maybe 4.5 at the very most. I don't think... I don't think it really hit all the bases. And I'm being kind of generous, too. Because it was a good movie. I didn't feel anything wrong with it. But 4.5 at the best. It was decent, but it wasn't something that I'd go back to see a second time.
Really?
Yeah.
See, this is a movie I think I will be watching just, over and over. I
wasn't convinced with it entirely.
Wow.
For whatever reasons.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, much, hope you folks enjoyed this look at The Wrestler and McDonald's commercials. Tom, someone's journeyed from a faraway land. They've heard this podcast. They've heard this podcast in Syria. They come here with hopes.
Syria's a far off land now, huh?
Well, I had to think of a place. They come from a far off land with hopes and dreams of meeting the one man who has, you know, brought joy to their lives. How can they get hold of you?
They can't.
Tom, you've just broken, you know, someone's heart.
The way that they can do it is leave a message that I will not respond to on Cam's pcepisodes.blogspot.whateverthefuckitis.com.
So, thank you very much for coming and listening to this shortened episode of the Epicast. And yes, Tom, it is shortened. I know you're looking at the time meter there. Anything to say before we go?
Absolutely nothing.
Really?
Yeah, no.
Well, you don't say.
Well, happy trails, y'all. Good night.
You have a rendezvous with my ass, motherfucker.